Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Laura C. Cannon. She's author of The Conscious Entrepreneur, A Guide to Maximizing Success, Freedom, and Happiness. In this profound introduction to conscious entrepreneurship, author and business coach Laura C. Cannon teaches you how to harness your unique gifts and the power of your own consciousness to maximize your satisfaction and deepen your enjoyment of your business and your life. Grounded in research from the fields of modern psychology, Eastern philosophy, and personal development, this book explains six core principles necessary for radical transformational change both personally and professionally. You can find out more by visiting Laura's website, which is lauracannon.com, and I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Laura to the show. Good day, Laura.
Good day.
I'm really happy. Yes, I can.
Yes. Oh, great.
I know we had a little technical thing going on here. It was my show on Wednesday. I had some people from London, and it was toward the end of the show. They lost my voice, so I had to do some kind of creative ways to make sure I was heard. So if that should happen to this show, just hang on tight. I'll find a way in, okay?
Great.
Well, I usually like to start the show by having our guests give a little bit of a background about themselves and how it is they came to be working with the subject they are. So if you wouldn't mind, share a little bit with the listeners about your journey and how it is that you got to the point of writing about being a conscious entrepreneur.
Sure. So, it's funny, whenever anyone asks you this question, you always think, well, life is long. Where do I start on this journey of how I got here? And how do I decide, what are the important things that I think were really, kind of a start of that? Well, so I think that, there's two elements in the title of the book, and I think explaining probably both parts of my background would help with that. So there's the conscious and then there's the entrepreneur. And I'd like to think that I'm as conscious as I can be. And I think there's certainly no question about whether I'm an entrepreneur. I run several different businesses. So how I got there in college, I actually was at an event, and I talk about this in the book. And I remember looking around and thinking, I could do this. I could throw an event like this, and I probably, could make it run more smoothly and efficiently. And I remember my friend Dan said to me, well, you have no experience in this at all, but I know the kind of person you are, and I'm pretty sure if you set your mind to it, you could. And I said, well, I'm going to. And 3 months later, I created an event. I made a 200% return on my investment, and I thought, okay, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to run my own business. So that was event planning, and I did that for a little while, and I sold the business because I really felt this call to my heart to really explore another side of myself. So I went on a really deep spiritual journey for many years, and I moved out to the West Coast, and I started traveling, spent some time in Peru and South America and Mexico studying with curanderas and healers, and with a Reiki master. And so I really kind of delved into what I would call the heart side of my life. And I began volunteering in hospice. And I think, my time in hospice really, affected how I look at the world and what I thought was important about life. I would spend time with these people who were on their deathbed, some of whom were very successful in business. And up until that time, I thought that was what I really wanted to focus on, had been being successful by the world standards. And I would see these people get to the end of their life, and they were never talking to me about what job they did. You know, they'd get to the end and they'd be talking about the love and the relationships and how they felt fulfilled and the things in their life that, you know, they regretted not having done. And so it really focused me on wanting to live a life that wasn't just successful by maybe external standards, but also that left me feeling, you know, free and happy. And so so I started out on that path, and through that path, had the opportunity to mentor a lot of people who were, you know, trying to open up to the spiritual path. And one of those people asked me when she got engaged if I could perform her wedding. And I said, well, you know, legally I had become, I'd become a minister while I was doing the Reiki and the hospice, really for the purpose of clergy can go in and out of hospitals without, you know, having to worry about business.
Oh.
So it was really, it was really more kind of a, you know, legal protection than it was, you know, me going to seminary or something like that. And I was always a spiritual person. And she said, well, you know, you're the most spiritual person I have in my life, so would you please perform our ceremony? And I said, well, I've never done that before, but I'm happy to learn on you. So she she had me perform her ceremony, and when I was doing it, it was one of those, you know, as Oprah says, the aha moments. And I felt like, oh, I've really found a calling here, something where I can, you know, be sharing in this spiritual union of two people. And I felt really called to bridging this kind of business world and this heart space together. So I started a wedding efficient company, and that's grown over the past 15 years. And I opened up several different businesses in the wedding industry space. And, you know, it became, I guess, the external validation, you know, the external world, a successful entrepreneur. And so started getting the request to coach other entrepreneurs and to help them. And two kinds of clients started appearing really regularly. And I would say that either people who were really spiritual and heart-based and were looking at what I was doing and saying, I can feel the vibration of what you're doing, and I can also see that, you know, you're successful and you know, you're making money. And I've never been able to do that. You know, I can do the heart space, but I'm having a hard time grounding it in. Can you help with that? And the other type of clients that were showing up at my door were people that were, you know, executives, C-level executives, people who had reached some level of success in the business world, but then were getting there and feeling like so many of the people I saw in hospice, that wasn't all that there was. And so they were needing help in reconnecting to the heart space. So I look at myself more as a bridge, you know, between this heart and this headspace, and helping people to really, you know, find what true success is to them and then to anchor it into this world. So the book came about as, you know, I found I was always talking to both sets of these people, both frustrated entrepreneurs and maybe people who were wannabe entrepreneurs that were, you know, coming from that heart space. And that the messages seemed to be the same. And that what I was finding, that I was telling them the same kind of things over and over. And so those were the things that became the basis for the principles in the book, The Conscious Entrepreneur. So that recently just was released on the 20th of July. So it just came out. And it's been just such a blessing to be able to have it now in a form where even if people aren't coming to me for coaching, I can say, here, you know, go read this book. I hope it helps you. So that's how I got here.
Yeah, excuse me. Well, that's a wonderful summation, you know, of the journey. I mean, you know, each of those, I think each of those aspects, excuse me, really shows that, I mean, that the journey has been, you know, kind of guided along the way in each particular step, building on another, you know, and to you or to this particular point. So, and it is great to have the book. It is great to have the book there to, you know, because it just, yeah, I mean, when I got my first book out, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, now I have something to talk to about, you know, someone can actually hold in their hand. It's like, you know, I can save a whole bunch of time if you read a little bit about the book, you know. And
exactly.
And,
yeah. So it's so great for that. It is. And it's
funny, very much,
you know, I was going to say, in writing the book, part of, I think, the process, too, for me was I have a young daughter. She's about to be 3. So that being a mom has certainly influenced it. And she's just such a joy. And having her, you know, also kind of brings you to the same place, I think, that some of my hospice patients, where it really causes you to reevaluate life. And I thought to myself, what are the things in my life that I would want to leave as a legacy for my daughter? Like, what are the teachings or the things that I have learned that have truly helped me to suffer less, right? Because we all suffer, you know, it's mm-hmm. part of the experience of life. And I think that, you know, we might not be able to eliminate suffering, but we can certainly find a way to ease it. And the principles in the book were really often, you know, part of them being birthed into reality was her in mind, was thinking, if I had to leave this book as a legacy and it would help not just all these other people, but this little person that I love so much, and she had to know everything that would be the things I would want to teach her as her mama, you know, they would be in this book. So that was also part of the inspiration, too.
Yeah, very much. Well, you know, let's start by a little bit by talking about the entrepreneur aspect. You know, it's, you know, here, you know, the experience that you mentioned, you know, in college, you know, of your first entrepreneurial, you know, venture. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that there is an entrepreneur in each of us, or is this a certain type of person to be able to, you know, follow that kind of path as far as a life journey?
Great question. I think, you know, that's a question I've gotten before about, you know, do you think that entrepreneurs are born or made, you know? And I think mm-hmm. that the truth is it's a little bit of both. And I think that people who, you know, maybe don't think of themselves as entrepreneurs can kind of push the edge and learn some of the skills. But what I've come to find is that I think that you either are somebody who wants to create and be at the head of that spark of creation, or you find yourself as someone who wants to support, you know, that you want to be in a supporting role. And I've been in that role too, but it was something from a young age for me personally. You know, both of my parents had entrepreneurial jobs. You know, my dad was the partner in a company. My mom has been an entrepreneur. My uncle and aunt were entrepreneurs, and I worked for them when I was a teenager. So I think that I always just had a, you know, experience of being around them. So I never thought that, oh, this is something some people are and some people aren't. You know, I spent some time in college, I worked in that period of time, I worked at a college and I was counseling entrepreneurs in an entrepreneurship program there. And these were students who were just starting in college and were really not sure, you know, if that's what they wanted to pursue. And so I know for sure that there are things that you can learn and that you can be taught that can help you, that are tools to be an excellent entrepreneur. But, you know, there are things about being an entrepreneur that some people don't find appealing. It can be very lonely, you know, especially as a mm-hmm. solopreneur by yourself. And I think some people long for community and they long for having coworkers and they long for a structured schedule. And those aren't always things that you find, you know, being an entrepreneur. So I think anyone can do it, but that some people feel more drawn to it than others, and that some people just have to learn to see themselves that way. I meet tons of people who I think are super creative, who are leading, you know, mothers even, you know, mothers are leading a household. They're the ones responsible for managing a schedule and managing the resources, you know, in their own right. They're entrepreneurs, you know, they are leading their household. So I think that, you know, it's really the way that you look at it and that you see yourself as part of it too.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think that's an excellent explanation, you know, because there, you know, it seems that whatever, I mean, it's based on the need of the individual, you know, what they feel like you talked about, you know, the sense of community and, you know, or even being in a certain place at a certain time, you know, and being an entrepreneur, you certainly have to be self-driven, you know, and some people, you know, prefer to be driven rather than, you know, be self-motivated.
Yeah, as my friend says, you know, sometimes in life there's hammers and there's nails, and she says, Laura, there's no question, you're a hammer. So,
you know. I like that. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now with that idea of entrepreneurship, let's talk a little bit about the other part of that title, the conscious aspect. Is that conscious refer, because you mentioned a few times, to the heart connection? Is that where the conscious aspect takes form?
Well, I would say that consciousness, we could use that word synonymously with awareness and what we're aware of. A lot of times, you know, as entrepreneurs, maybe we're, and this is true of in any profession, you know, when we're leading others, we can be more effective if we're conscious and aware of our own motivations. And that really, you know, becoming conscious is aligned with becoming fully aware. And I think the reason I talk about the heart is because you really can't become fully aware just living in your head. And most of us walk around, you know, day to day, you know, the thoughts are moving and we're, you know, thinking about one thing or the other. And oftentimes, you know, we're doing one thing and thinking about another, and it's hard to stay present. And when I say the heart, I really mean the feeling, you know, feeling our body, feeling our breath, being in this moment. So one of the chapters in the book, for example, is about presence and learning how to be aware in our body. So, you know, when we're at work, when we're doing our vocation, you know, how aware are we of how our environment is affecting us? What signals is our body giving us? There's another chapter about the inner compass. You know, what signals is the body giving us that can be information that we can use to grow both personally and professionally?
Yeah, very much. You know, the chapter on presence, chapters or one of the sections in that chapter talks about how we go missing. Is that in reference to just kind of not being in the present, just not kind of being elsewhere in the future, in the past, you know, 30 miles away from here, 1,000 miles away from here?
Exactly. You know, and that's, you know, largely where most of us find our day, you know, so this isn't an admonishment of, oh, you shouldn't be doing this, but a reality check of, for most of us, you know, we'll be doing one thing and we're thinking about the next thing. We live in a very future-oriented society, especially here in the West, you know, where we're constantly thinking about the next thing. We're thinking about the next thing. And sometimes I'll explain this to people and they'll say, well, I don't understand. You know, of course you're present. You're standing right here in front of me. And I said, well, what if I took out my cell phone right now and as you were talking, I was sitting here texting with someone else and just telling you, you know, like, yes, I'd be present. I'd be physically standing here. But am I fully engaged on all cylinders? Is my heart connecting to you? Am I looking at you in the eye? Am I aware of everything that's happening, not just for me, but also for the person that I'm engaged with? So when we go missing, it's like maybe we can be present for a second, and then sometimes, you know, we'll feel triggered, or we'll have an experience, or we'll just all of a sudden remember, oh, there's, you know, I got to go grocery shopping later. And we get pulled out of this present moment. And that's really common. And so part of learning how to become more conscious is to start training and giving ourselves ways to say, okay, you know, it's human. I'm going to come out of this present moment. But what can I do to remind myself to come back and to be here and to be present more often?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and I understand. I mean, I've done that myself plenty of times. Gone missing. It's like, wait a minute, come back. But you know, with the entrepreneur aspect, it seems that you know, quite often, like what I have to buy next, what kind of supplies I have, you know, my marketing program. I mean, it seems like there's the planning of the business. I mean, there's that. It's a natural and necessary, to a degree, activity that you have to engage in. So it seems to me that there's got to kind of be a balance between that future attention, the planning for the future, you know, needs, as well as being present in the business.
Mm-hmm. Well, Robert, I'm glad you said that because, you know, one of the feedbacks that I've been getting about the book and what people have appreciated is that I'm actually challenging this idea of balance, because I think most entrepreneurs, if there's any entrepreneurs that are listening, they know that you end up working probably more hours than people have a 40-hour a week job. And in fact, I think there's a quote that says, you know, entrepreneurs are the only people that are crazy enough to work 80 hours to avoid working 40. You know, we're often super, super busy and there's a lot going on. I mean, like I said, I have several businesses, so my brain is often full, but this idea that we can balance it all. And I think so many people end up beating themselves up because they feel like, are you kidding me? I cannot balance this all. How could I possibly? There's just so much. And so something I talk about in the book is instead of thinking of this as like a work-life balance, that really we should be looking at this as work-life integration, that, you know, it's not that we're working for a little while and then we're saying, okay, like now's our time to rest and relax. I mean, certainly it's important to have that space that's work-free, but how are you being more present even in those activities? So even when I'm having to plan for some future day, how do I learn and train to be present in what I'm experiencing right now and be gathering information from that as well? So really it's about integrating these ideas and learning how to use these tools more than it is saying, well, you know what, I'm going to work like a crazy person for 80 hours and then I'm going to go, you know, sit in a cave and meditate for 6 days. You know, it's really about how can I feel that way all the time?
Well, you know, that's interesting. I like the idea of the integration aspect and not really focusing or getting obsessed with the balance aspect because, you know, as an entrepreneur myself, I've driven myself batty plenty of times when trying to balance what seems to be maybe the unbalanceable, you know. That's very freeing to be able to think that way.
Yes.
And And keeping in mind the integration aspect, how does one integrate that aspect and still not have their whole life be the business? You know what I mean? I mean, it's, you know, I can understand, you know, how, you know, you can kind of work with them both, let them, you know, give and take, you know, as needed, as far as, the integration aspect. But for some people who find it difficult to be able to, I mean, there are, like you say, entrepreneurs can work 80 hours per week, you know, to try to avoid that 40. But working at 80 hours a week, sometimes there's a tendency to not give attention to other things, like the alone time, or, you know, just quality time with your daughter or your family, you know. And, I mean, those are obviously very important as well.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, you know, I think that the purpose really of this book is to help people to see the thread that runs through it all. So when I'm a mother, when I'm running one of the businesses, when I'm speaking, when I'm talking to you, when I'm, you know, with my partner, all of those are different facets of myself. But the one thing that is the thread between all of that is my ability to be conscious and aware. So I've learned how to stop identifying with myself as any one of those things in particular, you know. So when I'm spending, let's say I've had a 10-hour day, you know, and I've been working on my business. It's one thing to have a 10-hour day and work on your business and lose sight of the part of you that is there with your daughter, the part of you that is there, you know, with your partner. If you're able to keep attached to that part of yourself, to keep awareness centered around the part of you that is unchanging, the part of you that is always here, the part that is that's always existent. And I often use the breath as a way to illustrate this point. So You know, the breath is such a great tool for integration, for helping us to do the things I'm talking about. Because if you really think about the breath, you know, it's the first act that we take when we enter this world. You know, it's like literally how they're born, and we take this breath and we keep breathing all the way until we stop. Okay. And so that breath is our constant companion. It's the thing that's always there. And I liken that to our conscious awareness. It's always there. It doesn't require us. Okay. It doesn't need us. So if we, you know, I just challenge everyone to ask themselves now, you know, how many times today have you already thought about your breath?
Yeah.
Probably not at all.
Right.
Probably just now. And good thing it doesn't need us. You know, good thing it does not need us to run that. You know, it's so funny. Entrepreneurs are like, I got everything under control. I'm running this. I think, well, good thing you don't have to run your breathing, or you would have been dead hours ago.
Right.
But that is the thing that's always there. And so when you're finding that you're in these 10-hour work days and that you're, you know, maybe you're afraid you're going to neglect other things, coming back to the breath and coming back to the thing that's constant helps you to not get too far away, because that part, that breath, that consciousness is also there when you're with your child, is also there when you're with your partner. It's the constant. So you look at that more like an anchor. Like, this is the anchor that's going to keep me connected to what's really important, to what's most important in my life. And I'm going to argue that the most important thing is to be conscious and aware as much as you possibly can. And that really comes from my experience, again, in hospice, in seeing people at the end of their life and seeing that they just wish they had been more present with everything that they were experiencing, you know, with their children, with their loved ones. And so I think it's really important when we're trying to integrate to really lock onto something as an anchor that's going to be there with us through both the business and the personal. And so the breath is a great tool.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's great. We're going to go ahead. We're already halfway through the show, so I want to take just a quick break, and I do want to invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask Laura any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And again, for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in. And then we do have a question, Laura, that from the chat room that I want to address when we come back. And that question is from Roger. It says, How does one become a, quote, successful entrepreneur and avoid adopting the Donald Trump-style mindset? So, not politics here, but I will say that the fact that Corrine, who's also listening in the chat room, said the fact that you're here listening is a guarantee that you wouldn't turn into that. But let's go ahead.
I would agree.
Okay. So when we come back, though, let's kind of talk about the idea of a, quote, successful entrepreneur. Okay. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide: books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. there is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Laura C. Cannon, and we're talking about her newly released book, The Conscious Entrepreneur, A Guide to Maximizing Success, Freedom, and Happiness. And again, you can find out more about her book, as well as the other services Laura offers, by visiting her website, which is lauraccannon.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Laura.
Great. Great. So let's answer this question. why don't you read me this question one more time?
Sure. Yes, and he also put in a comment after that since we were on the break. Okay, first of all, the question was, how does one become a, quote, successful entrepreneur and avoid adopting a, quote, Donald Trump-style mindset? And then one of the things he also indicated is that in the past, with his electrical contracting company, he was successful, but he didn't like himself. So, and you know, I think it kind of goes to the idea of being a successful entrepreneur, and then, you know, some of the aspects that, you know, may not be the conscious part, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I'll answer that kind of in two parts. So, you know, in the first, in the Donald Trump part. So, I think, you know, what we really see there, and I'll just touch on this, I think what we really see there is someone who really looks at themselves as being the only creator, and you don't hear him talk much about the support and how he got there and all the many people that work for him or his company, right? So he really looks at it like this is him and his genius and what he's doing. And I would say anybody that is conscious, right, you know, in the same way that we talked about the breath, you know, we're all sharing the same breathing space. We're all in this process of the breath. We're all in this together. You know, I have a whole chapter about oneness. And I think that, you know, what it takes to be a truly successful entrepreneur is that you recognize that indeed it is all one thing, and that the way we treat others is the way that we treat ourselves. And, you know, in asking, you know, you mentioned having the electrical contracting business and not liking yourself as much after that. So let's talk about success and what that really means. You know, there's many different kinds of success, right? So we could agree that maybe success is achievement, maybe it's money. I'll tell you a little story. When I first started in college, I thought that I wanted to be an investment banker. And the reason that I thought that is because I thought that being successful meant having a lot of money. That's just how I had learned it growing up, that that's what it meant. So I just picked a career thinking, well, I heard this has a lot of money. This would be good. And as I started doing it, and I was successful in the business classes, but I did my first internship in the field, and I realized, oh my gosh, I would hate the person that I would become if this is what I did, and that I hated it. I had put all my eggs in that basket, and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, what am I going to do now? And I had to really ask myself to look at what my definition of success was. So what I've now coached people to do, and I invite you, if you go to my website at lauraccannon.com/offers, there's a really great exercise that I lead people through about finding and following your calling in 7 simple steps. And a part of that is for you to visualize what success means to you. So like I said, for me, I thought it was money, but having worked with clients over the years, I've seen that money always represents something to people, right? It's not just the paper. Mm-hmm. It's not, and for us now, it's not just the numbers on the screen looking at our bank account, but it's what is that giving you? So when you see those numbers on the screen, are you getting security? Is it, maybe it's freedom? So whatever that feeling is, if you're not finding a way to cultivate that feeling in whatever business endeavor you set out to do. So let's say that you have this business, you've got this, and I can relate, I've got a business that's, you know, largely contractors. It's a difficult business. And if you are not feeling the feelings, right, it sounds kind of cheesy, but if you're not feeling the feelings of what that money or what that success meant to you, if you're not feeling freedom, you're not feeling that, then are you really successful? You could be making millions of dollars, but if it's not giving you that feeling, you have to start asking, how can I be giving myself that feeling in small and simple ways every day? As we talked about before, this whole forward thinking that we often do, you know, we have mm-hmm. this idea that, oh, if I just do this, or if I just earn this, or if this happens, or if I get this book deal, or this, like as if the success exists somewhere out there in the future. And the truth of the matter is that, you know, the future can only come through one place. It can only come through the present moment. This future that we imagine, when it actually arrives, it's going to happen now, in a moment. And so we really have to bring those feelings into our present moment. We have to learn how to cultivate them here and now. And I think that that's the difference, you know, being conscious and aware of what are our motivations and am I staying aligned with them? It's easy to get lost. It's easy to come out of alignment. So what am I doing to bring myself back and to check in with myself and say, you know, am I still on track for what my heart's goal really is?
Yeah. So, you know, in that case of where you did that little internship about investment banking, and you said that you mm-hmm. would not have liked who you would have become.
That is
because what the job required was not in alignment with who you are, correct? Is that kind of what I'm gathering?
Yes, and it was, you know, like I was saying, in this exercise that I have on the website, I invite you to find the three words for you that are your three words. Like, these are what the three words of success mean to you, for example. And I knew that one of those words for me was and still is freedom. And mm-hmm. when I went to this internship, the man sat me down in the chair. I wasn't even 21. And he sat me down in the chair, and the first thing he asked me was, you know, do you like to drink? And I said, well, no, I'm not even 21. And he said, well, you better learn how to drink and you better learn how to dress really well, because this is an industry that's dominated by men and your deals are going to happen in a bar and you're going to be working 80-hour weeks and you're never going to see your family and you're going to have to learn how to hold your drink, how to hold your liquor, how to wear a shirt skirt and how to, you know, have a family without ever seeing them. And I remember thinking, okay, no, like none of those things are at all in alignment with what I want to do. And if you're telling me, as someone who's quote unquote successful in this field, that that's what it's going to take, I'm going to trust you right. And I'm going to just bow out now. Thanks anyway.
Really? Boy. But for some people, that may be exactly what they're looking for. And so.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. 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 I don't know anyone like that myself, but
right.
So
and you know,
key,
maybe
really.
Investment banking is not like that, but you know, that for this gentleman, this is how he described it. And I thought, no, I'm okay.
Yeah. Wow. One of the things that you talk about in the book is the inner compass. There's a chapter in several sections regarding an inner compass. Would you mind okay. Kind of just talking a little bit about that? Does that kind of relate back to, you know, those kind of finding those three words, you know, that are important to us each?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, everybody understands this idea of you know, following your gut, you know, and listening mm-hmm. to your inner instincts, you know. So I think that in Western culture, we just don't really place a huge value on following our instincts or really anything that involves feelings kind of generally. And so that I think that we all do have this inner wisdom. We have this inner wisdom of knowing for ourselves what feels right and what doesn't feel right. But that oftentimes the calibration of that compass can be really off, you know, because we haven't been spending enough time kind of like checking in and coming back. And so when it comes down to it, you know, you're, as an entrepreneur, you're the one that's responsible for making all of the decisions that you're going to make. you know, and certainly there's a place for logic and, you know, deductive reasoning and all of that there. But, you know, you also have to really learn how to tap into that part of yourself. And so I offer in the book, I have some different exercises about, you know, starting to understand, like, what are the thoughts in my head versus how do I feel about something? Because I think a lot of times when people go to contemplate a problem, they hear the thoughts in their mind and they hear how they think about it, and then they just decide that that's how it is. And what I challenge people to do is, you know, when you're really contemplating something for your business or even in your personal life, you know, is sit down and listen to the different thoughts that are coming up. Write them down, you know, because a lot of times we have tapes that just kind of are the replay tapes that always come back, you know, and that's part of being conscious is learning what those replay tapes are. Like, I have a tape that I'm, even despite having a book with my name on it, I have a tape that says, I hate writing and I am not a writer. So anytime that I want to, so for years I listened to that voice and I only spoke,
right.
I only did speaking engagements. I did not write anything. And everyone kept saying, you've got to write. I said, well, I don't write. I'm not a writer and I hate writing. I mean, I've said that phrase probably 1,000 times in my life. And then, you know, part of doing this process on myself and this work of keeping myself conscious, I, of course, I do coaching myself and I have a coach. And my coach said to me, you know, you're a super conscious person. Do you not realize that you have said at least 10 times in this conversation that you hate writing? And I said, I didn't really realize that I always say that. And she said, well, you do. You need to start looking at these thoughts and realizing how these things that are really just thoughts, they're controlling you, and you think you feel this way about writing, but really this is just possibly a story that you've been telling yourself for a long time. So I became more conscious of some of the thoughts that I was having that I was misunderstanding as being my feelings. And I started reworking the stories around them. And, you know, I like to be very transparent. We're always a work in progress, myself included. So, you know, the writing one is still one that I work on. Someone said, you know, even when I heard you say it on the break, you know, like I'm speaking to author, I always think, oh, who's he talking to? Oh, wait, that's me. you know, I'm learning how to, you know, reframe my story around it and say, you know, well, maybe I still don't love writing, but I love sharing what I've learned with people. And so when I feel into it, no, I don't hate writing, but that was my story and my thought for so long. So learning how to separate out, you know, what is my thoughts? What are my feelings? How can I move into the body? I have a couple different exercises in the book about practicing self-inquiry, starting to learn, you know, what certain emotions feel like in the body. You know, for example, grief can feel like this really heavy sensation in the heart. Whereas if you think, if you just for a moment, instead of thinking, but feel into the body. And if I said, what does it feel like when you feel angry? If you think of something you've been really angry about. And when you draw that memory into your mind, you can kind of feel in the body that there's usually a sense of tightness and pressure and heat. And often with anger, you'll feel a sense of propulsion, like a pushing out, like a wanting to move. Whereas with fear, When we feel fear in the body, it often shows up as a clenching, a tightness, often in like the throat or the chest or the heart center. So when we're having interactions in business, it can be really helpful to start to know your own body's messages for you. You know, if someone's speaking to you and all of a sudden you're feeling tight and you're feeling fear, then taking that deeper. Well, am I feeling fear because this is triggering something inside of me, or is this my body signaling to me that maybe this isn't the best path for me to be walking down at this moment?
Yeah, very, very important to be able to listen to those messages that the body gives, because, I mean, you know, it, like you say, some of the replay tapes that we have, you know, are showing us, you know, some of the our beliefs, you know, as to first of all whether they be true or not, you know, in some cases, like for example, the I'm not a writer, I hate writing, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, it could easily have gone back to a teacher who said, you can't write worth a damn, you know,
yep.
And then, you know, you know, and, you know, I've got a few of those. I mean, even after 50 years, I keep coming up and it's like, ah, you know, I know better. Come on, be gone. But also that, you know, some of the bodily reactions, like you say, can be like a soul communication. Like, I know, you mm-hmm. know, working with this person isn't going to be good for you, or what they're telling you is doesn't seem to be quite true, or doesn't seem to resonate. Mm-hmm. You know, and those are important things to keep in mind, especially for the entrepreneur. You know, when you're dealing mm-hmm. with, you know, customers as well as vendors, and you know, the whole scope of the business spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. It's such a valuable tool. And I mean, I think, you know, when you talk to these, you know, top level executives, you find that what a lot of them have in common is they all have a meditation practice. And part of, I think, what meditation helps you to do is to really start to become aware of your bodily sensations and how emotions and feelings and intuitions kind of show up in the body. So I think it's super important and can't be overlooked when it comes to being successful in business. And then, you know, it's not just listening to it, but it's trusting it and learning to follow it. I can't tell you how many times, you know, especially in the early years when I was younger and I, you know, thought that calling myself an entrepreneur meant that I had it all figured out. So I didn't like to say I'm an entrepreneur at all because I knew I didn't have it all figured out. But I was getting strong intuition about something, and, you know, people that were more experienced, people that were older than me would say, well, no, this isn't how you do it. That's not how it's done. And then I would feel, you know, so just unsure and so doubtful, like, well, these people, you know, I'm trained to listen to authority, and externally, you know, we look outside of ourselves for the answers. You know, that's like part of kind of our training, especially in Western culture. You know, we look outside and where are the answers? And so I started thinking, well, maybe they know more than me. I mean, they do have more experience. That's why you have a mentor. And so many times in the beginning, I would have these gut sensations that would tell me, you know, go with what you feel and not what you're being told. And I would go with what I was being told, and I would regret it every time. And that didn't take too many times before I learned, like, no, I'd rather follow my heart and be wrong and feel okay about that and learn something from that than be kicking myself doing something that my heart really didn't want to do just because someone else said this is the path to get there. And entrepreneurs all know this, but, you know, the hardest part about it is that there is no path. You know, there is no well-worn path. When you're an entrepreneur, you really are, you know, even if you're, let's say you have a, you know, a electrician business and, you know, sure, there's other electrician business, but not that are using the same software, not that have the same people, not that are running it in the same way that you are, not that focus on customer service the way you do. So, you know, you're really creating your own thing. So if you're not attuned with what it is, so the feelings that you want to experience more of and what you want to create, and you just try to copy, you know, what someone else or what looks like success to somebody else, those are the entrepreneurs I find that usually don't succeed. They usually don't succeed because at some point you can't just keep following, you know, the signals from outside. You have to be able to trust yourself.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's that whole kind of forging your own way is the whole spirit behind an entrepreneur, being an entrepreneur, and you know, if people only listen to the way things have been done, nothing would change. I mean, there would be mm-hmm. absolutely no innovation whatsoever if people just adhered to, you know, the way that it's always been done. And so, you know, in that particular aspect, I agree. You know, when it comes time to mentors and, you know, kind of following the way that it's been done, you know, it's really important to kind of forge your own way, for sure. So, but speaking of, you know, forging your own way and kind of being a change agent in a way, doing things differently. You know, there was one chapter in your book that I enjoyed, impermanence. You talk about impermanence and then, you know, the idea of obviously nothing stays the same. Nothing is always the same, that there's change. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, because people always talk about change, and you know, and I'm glad that you use the word impermanence, because it seems that for some people, when you say change, it's like a trigger. It's like, oh my God, I can't change, you know. But if you use the word impermanence, it gets people to, you know, kind of not feed into that trigger.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, I think that you're right. Couldn't have said it better. Change is super, super triggering of a word, but, you know, especially because people are, well, you know, very defensive of, well, what does that mean? And what am I going to have to give up? And so, mm-hmm. you know, the truth is, the reason I focus on impermanence is because, you know, this comes a lot both from my spiritual background and both from, my time in hospice. You know, just seeing that the nature of life, the nature of things is that they are impermanent. You know, it's just that we don't want to look at that. We don't want to look at that because then it feels like, well, how do we plan if it's all just, you know, if it could all just go away tomorrow, then what's the point of doing anything? And that's just a, you know, a kind of nihilistic way of looking at it. But no, you can actually embrace that and you can say, no, that's actually the truth of what is. The truth of what is that nothing is going to stay the same. So if this is it, this is the only moment, you know, that's the beauty of the teaching of impermanence, is that it will change. But what won't change is the here and the now. That is the constant. So how do we ground ourselves not in the external reality, not in the part that we know, you know, birth and death and, you know, tragedy and joy and, you know, the ever-changing flux of our experience, you know, that we can't change that while we're alive. That's going to happen. But what we can do is we can focus and balance ourselves and ground ourselves in the thing that doesn't change. You know, like I was saying, the breath, in the part of mm-hmm. life that is beyond the things that are changeable.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
I have
to share
this.
Embracing is important.
Oh, it is. It is. You know, and I personally, I was always open to change, but, you know, I would say probably about 7 or 8 years ago is the point where I really embraced change. To me, it just makes life so much more fun. you know, never know.
I'm so curious, Robert. So how do you find that you were able to embrace change, or what was it that allowed you to make that shift? I think that would be helpful for people to know, because I think it's so difficult, you know, when you've been stuck in a pattern of, like, how did you do that?
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's interesting. You know, I was always open, you know, to change. I wasn't highly resistant to it, and I know some people who are very resistant. So I had a tendency toward, you know, accepting, but the shift to embracing, it was one of those cases where it was an entrepreneur. It was a project that was going on. I had, you know, one of the things that I do is I help a lot of businesses with business planning, you know, and do all that kind of thing. My background was in corporate finance for a while. So I do spreadsheets and variables and all those kinds of things, you know, contingency plans, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But when I did one for me, for one of the projects I was working on, it was, you know, I had like all of these possibilities, you know, that could happen, you know, and I was changing, you know, going with the flow as according to things were unfolding. And then something just happened. It was a chance media encounter, you know, that kind of mm-hmm. catapulted what I was doing into the forefront of, you know, quite a few people. And that was something mm-hmm. that was not in my plan, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, and it really, I mean, it was excellent. It was really a really, really positive thing. So, I mean, it was one of those things where it's like, oh, my God, you know, here it was that, you know, I had all of these plans and contingencies and, you know, able to kind of bend as needed. And here is something that kind of completely out of the blue, you know, blew everything out of the water, you know, and I had to kind of, but,
yeah.
But from that point forward, it was like, you know, I'll do a plan, but it'll be very loose. You know, I mean, it'll be just more of a, you know, a kind of a guidepost to, you know, what it is that I want to achieve and allow for maximum synchronicity and coincidence and chance,
yeah,
and, you know, all those kinds of things to pop in, you know, and feel free, you know, to guide my way as well. So, I mean, so once that happened, it was like, you know, and the changes that occurred after that, it was like, oh, I love this, you know, so, you know, and each time it was a change. So it got to the point where it was a repetitive, positive reinforcement of change, of what change can do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was,
mm-hmm,
at that point, once I experienced that positive, repetitive, I got to the point where I expected change to bring positive results. You know, so that's,
ooh,
when I had that mental shift to embracing change. Now, not, again, not every change always ended up in positive, but nonetheless,
right,
it was a clearly a mental shift, and it came about as that repetitive experience. And so, for people out there, it's just a matter of making changes and feeling the excitement,
that's
the joy.
I mean, yes, that's a great point. You know, like the feeling of the feeling part, you know, that's, I mean, it sounds kind of crazy, but that really is the magic medicine of how to make all of this work and how to really embrace impermanence. You know, it's feel whatever comes up. You know, I think I say in the book that the antidote to resistance, which is what we normally feel when there's change, the antidote,
mm-hmm,
to that is acceptance. And that means, it doesn't mean you have to like it, right? You know, like it's great if it's those joy and all of that, but you know, sometimes it's grief and sometimes it's pain and sometimes it's really not,
yeah,
something that we want. We want to push it away. But still, the advice is the same. You know, when we find ourselves there, how can we just be with it? You know, so one of the things I do is if one of those feelings is coming up is I just kind of put my hand on my heart. And let's say it's grief and I just kind of take a breath and I silently nod to myself and say, like, okay, like grief, there it is. Like, here you are. Like, I see you. I feel you. And I just accept it. And it's, you know, another thing that I often say is the only way out is through. You know, if you want to move through any change, anything that you're struggling with, you have to move through. You can't go over, can't go under, you can't go around.
Mm-hmm.
And the quicker that you're able to do that, you know, whether it's an easy one because it's joy or it's harder because it's pain, the quicker that you're able to just express and feel that feeling, it will change because that's the nature of life. It will change.
Absolutely. Well, Laura, we're down to the last couple minutes. Our hour has just flown by. Is there any maybe final words or any comments that you may want to leave the listeners with that maybe we didn't cover?
Sure. I mean, I think two things I mentioned before. I'm definitely going to the website and looking at the offers page to download this video that I was talking about. If you're looking for a quick way to figure out, you know, what is it that's success to me? What are my three words? So that you can start doing some practical things to bring yourself more in alignment with that. You know, and if you realize that you're out of alignment in your life, it doesn't mean you need to go out and, you know, quit your job tomorrow and make some drastic change. But you can start taking little pieces of action now, because that's what conscious change is. Conscious change is not just becoming aware of what we need to do, but actually moving into taking the action steps. So these small little actions, and I will share a secret tip of one that I do every day. So because it becomes easy to forget to be present, to forget about the breath, as we talked about earlier, I designate all doorways in my life as my chance to breathe. And I mean physical doorways, the door to my bathroom, the door to my office, the door to my car. And I have trained myself to say, if I go through a door of any kind, breathe, and just bring my awareness back inside of myself instead of, you know, being focused externally, like just for a moment. No one has to know what I'm doing, but it's an opportunity to come back and re-arrive. So find something in your own life. Borrow my doorways or find something else that you do consistently and just attach your reminder to breathe and to come back to that thing. And that can be a really helpful way to start integrating your life and your head and your heart all into one thing.
Oh, that's great. I like that little tip. That's wonderful. Well,
Try it out.
Thank you. You're great. Thank you very much for your time today, Laura. I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed our chat.
Oh, me too, Robert. Thank you so much. I'm loving everything that you put out there. So keep shining your light on the world.
Thank you very much. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Laura C. Cannon. We've been talking about her newly released book, The Conscious Entrepreneur, A Guide to Maximizing Success, Freedom, and Happiness. And again, there is a direct link to her website, lauraccannon.com, and it's in the show page description. So definitely check it out and look at all of the things that she has to offer. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.